This is CBS Eye on the World. I'm John Batchelor. Belt and Road Initiative. Once upon a time, it dominated conversations about the People's Republic of China outside of the boundaries of the mainland. Belt and Road Initiative. Where are we now? I welcome Victoria Herzeg of the Geopolitical Futures and Analyst. She is in Budapest writing about the Belt and Road Initiative 2024. And it is considerably less than the imagined, the hoped for. Question is, what happens next? Victoria, a very good day to you. Thank you for this. I read that in 2015, which is an easy memory, the Chinese People's Republic of China had $4 trillion in foreign reserves. And of that money, the presumption was the Belt and Road would receive a bounty. What was the mission when Belt and Road was first initiated? I remember Xi Jinping talking about it, but I didn't pay attention to his dream. What was it then when he had $4 trillion? Good evening to you.
Good evening to you, John. Thank you for having me. So yes, when the Belt and Road Initiative was first introduced, it was like the biggest dream for China. It was a monumental idea. It was an idea that was meant to create an expanded interdependent market for China, a market that would connect different regions of the world, Southeast Asia, Central Asia, Africa, Europe. So basically almost the entire world, connecting these regions with special regard to developing countries in need of investment and innovation. And with that, it was also meant to grow China's geoeconomic and geopolitical power over those regions. So it was something that was introduced to be a win-win cooperation, something beneficial for both the developing regions in need of investment and also, of course, for China to have more power, more might, and also this reputation of being this great benefactor of nations in need. So that was the initial idea of Belt and Road.
Yes, I believe that sometimes that's called soft power. So we come to how it was going to be done. The China Development Bank, the Bank of China, and you mentioned an Exim Bank as well. They were the deliverers of money for a credit for projects. The People's Republic of China would identify a project. Let's take one, Gwadar, the large port in Pakistan. They would identify that and loan money to Pakistan to develop the port. Is that how they did it?
Exactly. Through those banks. Those banks were meant to become alternatives to very similar Western banks and banking systems. And yes, through those banks, the money was loaned to the given countries, in this case, Pakistan.
Now, the results are easy in number terms. Vicky reports on the Lowy Institute in Australia's recent study. 24 major regional projects, a combined $77 billion. Only $25 billion have been delivered. What happened, Vicky? Why the shortfall almost 10 years later?
So there are several reasons for the failure of these major projects. So the biggest one, I think, is that back in 2015, 2016, when all this really started, China was in a considerably better economic situation than it is in now. So it had reserves. It was number one economically in every sense, basically, and it had high hopes for the future. So the Chinese leadership felt like it could manage these major projects financially. So that's one thing. It didn't expect COVID. It didn't expect the economic downturn that it experienced. That's one major reason. Also, China has never really been transparent about the deadlines for these loans and what amount of money it would give in what period of time. So there was not enough communication with the target countries. Vague promises were made by China. The promises were deliberately vague because when COVID hit and the economic problems emerged, the leadership started perceiving the issues and started considering that it would not be able to deliver and keep its promises. So the promises became more and more vague. And also, many of the nations, the target nations, these developing countries, accepted China's promises without enough consideration, and they also didn't end up having enough finances to be able to fund the parts of the projects that China wasn't able to fund on time. So there are several reasons, but the main one is money and the change in the economic situation of China. So that's the biggest one.
The one I'm familiar with is Ecuador. It's an odd story. Correa, the previous boss of Ecuador, now in exile, living in Europe, I believe I'm told, maintaining a great deal of authority in a troubled country, ripped with narco-terrorism. It has a dam. The dam is springing leaks in all directions. It's badly built. It was badly sited. It changed the course of rivers. They overflowed. A nightmare. It was built by Belt and Road Initiative money, which, of course, has not been paid back because the dam is not delivering. But in any event, it was built by a Chinese construction company. They flew in, they built it, they left. That's the example I know best. I hadn't looked at it from the Belt and Road Initiative point of view because they lent the money, then they lent money to service the money they'd lent, and then they did some more, and I don't know where they are today. There's a new government in Ecuador, and they have troubles enough with gunfire. However, I didn't see that as typical. Is that typical? A badly built by a Chinese construction company, servicing the loan for a while, and then vamoosing. Does that sound like other projects?
Yes, unfortunately, I wouldn't say it's typical. So there are not many cases like that, but there are some other cases. It's a tendency for these Chinese construction companies to just want to be done with the given project. They just go in, they finish. So it's known that in East Asia, in Japan and South Korea as well, infrastructure projects are completed magically quickly. So that's something that's shocking for us in Eastern Europe, for example. And it's characteristic of China as well. But in this case and in some other cases, it's true that they don't pay enough attention to safety, and they don't take precautions. They just go in, they complete the project, they get their money, and they just leave, and that's it. And that's really a sad and really bad thing, because it's dangerous, and also it cannot function. It has to be repaired. The whole it's not going to be able to function, this dam, for example. And that's another project that's not serving the purpose it was meant to serve in Ecuador.
We can go.
It's not good for any of the sites.
We can go down the list that Vicky points to in her article at Geopolitical Futures, a subscription site. East Coast Rail Link in Malaysia, the Thailand-China High-Speed Railway, the Philippine National Railway's Baikal Line, the Mindanao Railway in the Philippines, the deep sea port in Myanmar, called Kwa Kfu, Special Economic Zone. I mentioned the Gwadar port in Pakistan. All of them sound like Graham Greene novels to me. The disappointment, the dissolution, the corruption, the drifting away from a seaside table where you've been observing no one working at the project. What is to be done? Rather than look at China finding its gravity again after the long fall into a recession, you mentioned Japan, the G7's Partnership for Global Infrastructure and Investment. It's nowhere near as aggressive and lavish, but is it answering the challenge in your measure?
So those new schemes, like Japan has started something very similar in a sense to Belt and Road. In the same regions, Belt and Road was and still is present. So providing funds for infrastructure projects, mainly to developing countries. So it's very similar to Belt and Road, but it's much more targeted. It's much more calculated, and it's nowhere near as monumental as the Belt and Road idea used to be. The G7's partnership for global infrastructure and investment is more similar to what China is shifting to now. So smaller projects, high quality infrastructure, cleaner energy, digital connectivity. So projects like that, not major infrastructure projects like dams or ports. So it's similar to what China is doing now with this small but beautiful scheme idea. Those are alternatives, and many of the countries that have become disillusioned with stalled, unfinished Belt and Road projects, and even the danger those projects can bring, are looking for alternatives. So that's exactly what they are looking for. Many of the Central Asian countries and also some of the ASEAN countries have become interested in Japan's what Japan is offering. Of course, it's not as large scale as the Belt and Road Initiative, nowhere near. But still, those are alternatives. Those are ideas. Those are schemes that can take countries away from China, that can take investment opportunities, target countries away from China. And that's something China really doesn't want, because it wants to cooperate with as many countries as possible. So it can provide Japan and this G7 infrastructure and investment scheme can inspire China to become more transparent and to really focus on these smaller, more targeted projects that it is planning to do now. Alternatives is what we have now, and it can be quite scary for China, because Belt and Road, even years ago, Belt and Road was the only such large scheme in the world, so there were no alternatives for that. So yeah, it's a very different situation for China, yeah. And it needs to consider that win-win cooperation should not just be words, but it's something it needs to act on, and it really needs to what China is doing really needs to be beneficial for the target countries as well, not just for China itself.
You note that Xi Jinping is committing money to the China Development Bank and the Export-Import Bank. I wonder if that, I'm just puzzled out loud that money might be to service loans that have not been repaid. I note also that the Philippines have rejected Chinese loans for 3 railway projects. Is that a trend, or is the Philippines the only one who's rejected their money?
So the Philippines is an interesting case. So there is conflict between China and the Philippines in the South China Sea. So
that's a conflict that has direct conflict
reignited recently. So there is hostility on the Philippines side. So it's not only about the Belt and Road not working. Many Southeast Asian countries are in very similar situations as the Philippines, and the Philippines is doing better economically than some of its other neighbors. So it can be the start of a trend among developing countries. We know that in Europe, Italy has recently pulled out of the Belt and Road Initiative because it wasn't serving Italy as it imagined initially that it would serve Italy's wishes and desires. So it's happening in other regions as well. Africa, many African countries are considering looking to Japan, for example. So it's not a trend yet, But it's the beginning of something.
Speaking with Victoria Herczeg. She is a geopolitical futures analyst. She's in Budapest. And we're speaking of the remains of Belt and Road. And when we come back, we'll just check on Budapest and Hungary in the other conflict zone, which would be Eurasia, especially Europe, after the remarks of these last weeks about what is to be done in Ukraine. This is CBS Eye on the World. I'm John Batchelor.
Stay tuned for more of CBS Eye on the World with John Batchelor.